lived in North Carolina a few years ago, and a friend of mine there was telling me a story of driving down near the near Plymouth, North Carolina, and they were driving through the town on the back side of this apartment building. There was huge sheet, three or four sheets that were together, and spray painted on those sheets was the words, "Touch not Naboth's vineyard." And the guy said, "We had to get to the bottom of that. What in the world?" So they started inquiring a little bit about it, and the story was that there was an elderly lady there who lived there. She's widowed, and her husband, you know, husband had passed away, and they had owned this property. And the city of Plymouth was doing some renovations, and they wanted to, in the downtown area, and they were wanting to exercise their power as a city to take over her property and to use it for whatever, you know, purposes they had, and they were offering to pay her for it. And she didn't want to move. And this was her way of expressing her, or protesting. And interestingly, she had a pretty good idea about a Bible story that we find in the 1 Kings chapter 21, and a biblical event. So if you want to turn there, we're going to look at that event this evening for a few minutes. Glad for everyone who's back. And I hope that you'll turn in your Old Testaments to this story. I actually thought about this lesson maybe a few weeks ago when Randy and I were doing the TV program, and he used reference to Naboth, and made me start thinking about this this story, which to some people may be very familiar, to others maybe it's not. But 1 Kings chapter 21, everybody there? And we're going to read for a few minutes. First of all, there are three main characters in this story. There's Ahab. He's the king of Samaria. He's probably was one of the most wicked men you would have ever met in the Old Testament. Wickeder than all the kings before him. He reigned 22 years. And there's six chapters devoted to him in the book of 1 Kings. And the only redeeming value that you can find in Ahab is every once in a while there's just a small flake of willingness to repent. Once in a while God would get on to him and he would be willing to change for a short amount of time. Does that twice, but most of the time he's completely wicked. The second character in this story is Jezebel. She is the queen of wickedness. She was a foreigner. She was a princess from Sidonia, a bit north of Israel. And she had no interest in the God of Israel whatsoever. She hosted lots of false prophets. She fed them at her table. And, you know, when you get the combination of a evil, greedy king and a wicked pagan queen, you've got a setting for 22 years of a bad time in Israel. And the third character in this story is a man named Naboth, and he is the good guy. Now, there are villains and heroes in the Bible, and Naboth is the hero. He is innocent, completely innocent. He doesn't do anything wrong, unless he has just a little bit of pride for his property. But other than that, Naboth doesn't do anything wrong in the story. But the fact that his property just happens to sit adjacent to the property of the king in Jezreel causes him tremendous difficulties and ultimately his death. So, with that little bit of background in mind, I want us to read a little bit and encourage you to open your Bibles to 1 Kings chapter 21. We're going to read the first 16 verses. Now it came about after these things that Naboth the Jezreelite had a vineyard which was in Jezreel beside the palace of Ahab, the king of Samaria. And Ahab spoke to Naboth, saying, "Give me your vineyard, that I may have it for a vegetable garden, because it's close beside my house. And I'll give you a better vineyard than that in its place, if you like, or I'll give you the price of it in money." But Naboth said to Ahab, "The Lord forbid me that I should give you the inheritance of my fathers." So Ahab came into his house sullen and vexed because of the word which Naboth the Jezreelite had spoken to him. For he said, "I will not give you the inheritance of my fathers." And he lay down on his bed and turned away his face and he ate no food. But Jezebel, his wife, came to him and said, "How is it that your spirit is so sullen that you're not eating food?" And so he said to her, "Because I spoke to Naboth the Jezreelite and said to him, 'Give me your vineyard for money, or else if it pleases, I'll give you a vineyard in his place.' But he said, 'I will not give you my vineyard.'" And Jezebel, his wife, said to him, "Do you not now reign over Israel? Arise, eat bread, and let your heart be joyful. I will give you the vineyard of Naboth the Jezreelite." So she wrote letters in Ahab's name and sealed them with his seal and sent letters to the elders and to the nobles who were living with Naboth in his city. Now she wrote in the letters saying, "Proclaim a fast and seat Naboth at the head of the people and seat two worthless men before him and let them testify against him saying, 'You cursed God and the king,' and then take him out and stone him to death." So the men of the city, the elders and the nobles who lived in his city, did as Jezebel had sent word to them, just as it was written in the letters which she had sent them. And they proclaimed a fast and seated Naboth at the head of the people. And then the two worthless men came in and sat before him, and the worthless men testified against him, even against Naboth, before the people, saying, "Naboth cursed God and the king." So they took him outside the city and stoned him to death with stones. And then they sent word to Jezebel and said that Naboth has been stoned and is dead. And it came about when Jezebel heard that Naboth had been stoned and was dead, that Jezebel said to Ahab, "Arise and take possession of the vineyard of Naboth the Jezreelite, which he refused to give you for money, for Naboth is not alive, but dead." And it came about when Ahab heard that Naboth was dead, that Ahab arose to go down to the vineyard of Naboth the Jezreelite to take possession of it. So now there's the story. Naboth was either really stupid or he had a lot of courage, didn't he? I mean, this king was really wicked. And he told him he wouldn't sell him his vineyard. Why was it that Naboth wouldn't sell? I mean, it's just a piece of land. I mean, it was just a vineyard. And he offered him, you know, either he'd buy him another vineyard or he'd give him some money for it. Well, first of all, I want to talk about Naboth's refusal, and then we'll talk for a minute about Ahab's proposal. First of all, to do that, we have to look back to the book of Leviticus very quickly. Look back to Leviticus chapter 25. Wow, something happened in my font shrank. It was a lot bigger when I made it. Okay, Leviticus chapter 25. The law of Moses on property rights. And we're going to read verses 23 through 28. 23 through 28. Leviticus 25, 23 through 28. "The land, moreover, the law of Moses said, shall not be sold permanently, for the land is mine. For you are but aliens and sojourners with me. Thus, for every piece of your property, you are to provide for the redemption of the land. If a fellow countryman of yours becomes so poor that he has to sell part of his property, then his nearest kinsman is to come and to buy back what his relative has sold. Or in case a man has no kinsman, but so recovers his means as to find sufficient for its redemption, then he shall calculate the year since its sale and refund the balance to the man to whom he sold it, and so return to his property. But if he has not found sufficient means to get it back for himself, then what he has sold shall remain in the hands of the purchaser until the year of Jubilee. But at the Jubilee it shall revert, that he may return to his property." So, now you can understand Naboth's refusal to sell his property. First of all, the law of Moses just basically forbid him to sell his property. You can't sell your land. And it says, God says, because it doesn't belong to you. Land's mine. He had parceled it out to various families in Israel, and that was where it was supposed to remain. Now, if you got into financial trouble, you couldn't afford your property, then a near kinsman, first of all, was supposed to buy the land in order that it might stay in your family, and he would pay you what the land costs, but it would stay in the family, so when he dies, it would revert back to the original owner. Now, if in the case you had no kinsmen and you couldn't afford to stay on your land, then you may lease it out But when you got back on your feet financially, that person was supposed to sell you your land back for the price of the land minus the number of years that that person had occupied it, if I understand this correctly. And then God even made the provision, if you never could buy it back, if you never had the means financially to buy your property back, that at the year of Jubilee, every 50th year, all debts were erased and the land would revert back to its original owner. So, that's, you know, God had parceled out the land and he determined that every family was to have it and that was their inheritance. And so now you can, if you go back and you read Naboth's statement again, if you go back to 1 Kings chapter 21, you can understand a little bit more his reasoning. Naboth said to Ahab, "The Lord forbid me that I should give you the inheritance of my fathers." You know, Naboth is not under any financial pressure here. He's not in financial trouble. Ahab says, "Sell it to me." And Naboth says, "Nothing to it. I'm not going to do it because the law forbids it." Now, you see that? Now I want you to think about Ahab's reaction to this. Ahab's reaction. Verse 3 through 6 again. Or verse 4. "So Ahab came to his house, and he was sullen and he was vexed because of the word which Naboth the Jezreelite had spoken to him. For he said, 'I will not give you the inheritance of my fathers.' And he lay down on his bed and turned away his face and ate no food. And Jezebel, his wife, came to him and said, 'How is it that your spirit is so sullen that you're not eating food?' And he said, 'Because I spoke to Naboth the Jezreelite and said, "Give me your vineyard for money, or else if it pleases you, I'll give you a vineyard in his place." And he said, "I will not give you my vineyard." You know, that is really sad. And here's a guy who has everything. If you just stop and think about what a man in his position, a king, would have in terms of property and lands and possessions. I mean, he has immense power, immense possessions. But, you know, he has to take something that rightfully belongs to someone else. That's kind of makes me think about a little kid. You ever seen some kids in a... you ever been to like a bookstore or a playground somewhere, and you see one kid sitting in one corner and he has 20 toys all around him, and another kid sitting in another corner and he has one. And this other kid, he's got all this stuff all around him, but that's not good enough. He wants that one toy that the kid in the other corner has, and he won't be happy until he gets it. And he'll walk over there and just take it away and walk away. And the sad thing is, a lot of times parents will let him do that. But... you know, this is the kind of man that Ahab was. And it's more sad still is his immaturity. Ahab doesn't just say, I wish I had that. Maybe I'll make him a counteroffer. I'll just offer him a counteroffer. And if he says no, no big deal. It's not going to bother me. It's just a thing. That's not the way it is. Verse 4 says he went and he lay down on his bed and he turned his face to the wall and he wouldn't eat any food. I mean, can you see him? He's pouting, whining, like that little kid with his lips stuck out because he didn't get what he wanted. And, it's like a grown baby. Have you ever seen that in kids? And even worse, in adults. He turns his face to the wall. I can't have what I want. I just won't do anything. In fact, I just won't even eat supper tonight. That's what I won't even have supper. Just faces the wall. What a sad picture. There's some good lessons in this. I mean, if we stop at this point. When you want something that's not yours, it's covetousness. When you want it and you're going to get it, it really doesn't belong to you. You see somebody something that somebody else has and you think, I ought to have that. I mean, I should have that. And you forget all of the other blessings that you have. You can't even see all the other blessings that surround you, but you've got to have that one thing that somebody else has. How do I behave when I don't get what I want? How do I behave? How do I behave in my marriage when I don't get what I want? Well, I just won't talk to her. That's what I'll do. I'll just act mad. And I'll give her the silent treatment. That's what I'll do. Or brethren do that sometimes in churches. Have you ever seen that? Some guy wants his way, And it doesn't even have to be a doctrinal issue. He just thinks this is a certain way it ought to be done. And if I don't get what I want, well, I'm just going to act put out. In fact, I may not even participate anymore. I'll just stop participating in worship. I won't even come back, maybe. You know? And that doesn't really solve the problem. But the really sad thing is, you know, it's when congregations will give in to that guy. Well, we need to keep brother so-and-so happy or sister so-and-so quiet, so we better just let them do it the way that they want it done. It happens all the time. And it's a control technique, you know, to keep that person from pitching a fit. We let them do what they want to do. When really what we probably ought to do is take them aside and say, our Father does not allow that kind of behavior in His family. His will guide this church. But, you know, it happens a lot of times. It happens at home, you know. And, yeah, I think of this story whenever there's that temptation to not do anything when a little kid pitches a fit. I always imagine, I'm raising a little Ahab here. You know, that's what we do. We let him jump on the ground, pitch a fit, pound on the ground, demand, and that's what you use, creating little Ahabs. And I just can't imagine, you know, that child, whenever he's 25 years old, doing that in some company or somewhere because he's not getting what he wants. And so, you know, Ahab's reaction is classic here. Unusual to see that kind of behavior in facilitates good lessons for us. But I want you to think about the contrast between. I want you to think about the contrast between Ahab and Naboth real quick. Look back to chapter 21, and we'll read verse 17 down to verse 20. Chapter 21, verse 17 through 20. Then the word of the Lord came to Elijah the Tishbite. He was God's prophet in that particular circumstance. And he said to him, arise, verse 18, and go down to meet Ahab, the king of Israel, who is in Samaria. Behold, he is in the vineyard of Naboth, where he has gone down to take possession of it. And you shall speak to him, saying, thus saith the Lord, have you murdered and also taken possession? And you shall speak to him and say, thus saith the Lord, in the place where the dogs licked up the blood of Naboth, the dogs shall lick up your blood, even yours. And Ahab said to Elijah, have you found me, O my enemy? And he said, this is Elijah, I have found you because you have sold yourself to do evil in the sight of the Lord. Behold, I will bring evil upon you, and I will utterly sweep you away, and I will cut off from Ahab every male, both bond and free, in Israel. And I'll make your house like the house of Jeroboam. Drop down a little bit further to verse 25. He says it the second time, surely there's no one else like Ahab who sold himself to do evil in the sight of the Lord, because Jezebel, his wife, incited him. Good contrast between Ahab and Naboth here. Ahab sold himself to do evil, but Naboth said, not for sale. You know, Ahab said to him, it's just a vineyard. But to Naboth, he said it was the inheritance of his fathers. You know, there's a lot more to this, more at stake here, really, than just a piece of property. For him, Ahab, that's all it was, a piece of land. But for Naboth, it was a relationship with God. It was his portion that God had allotted to his family. The inheritance sort of indicated a relationship between God and his people. And it's just like, God has given me a place here. And but that place in God, that relationship with God was conditional upon his faithfulness to God. And to sell it was to disobey God and to lose his relationship to him. And so there was there's a lot of good reasons. There's a lot of good reasons that Naboth might have sold. I mean, he may have thought, you know, you can't fight City Hall. I mean, you're going to lose it anyway, eventually. Or maybe he might have said, you know, what good is the dead man's vineyard to him? I mean, I'm going to die, so what good is it to me to keep this vineyard? Or how am I going to be a good example to all my neighbors of a faithful man if I sell out my property to Ahab? Or if I don't sell out to Ahab, I'll probably be dead. I won't be able to be an example to all my neighbors. You know, I'll be able to teach them about the Lord. But really, for Ahab, he was walking by sight. he was just scooping up anything that he saw that was material and things that pleased what him, you know, in terms of what he saw. But Naboth was walking by faith. He was walking by the faith of his fathers. Remember in Hebrews chapter 11, when we read about Abraham, by faith, when he was called, he obeyed by going out to a place where he was to receive an inheritance. And he went out not knowing where he was going. And by faith he lived as an alien in the land of promise, as in a foreign land, dwelling in tents with Isaac and Jacob, fellow heirs of the same promise. For he was looking for the city which has foundations, whose architect and builder is God. And by faith, even Sarah received the ability to conceive, and beyond the proper time, since she considered him a faithful who promised. Naboth is walking after the faith of their father. It's not just about a piece of property. It was about a promise to remain faithful to God in order to receive a much greater inheritance in the future. Well, that's kind of the story. Just a few applications here. The first thing is an application is that we say we need to have that idea of not for sale. I see people wearing T-shirts sometimes. Just say no to drugs, and it's gotten kind of popular in different evangelical type groups that there's all kinds of commercialism and all kinds of people wearing T-shirts for Christ. I don't think we should reduce the gospel to commercialism and wearing T-shirts. But if we're going to wear a shirt, we're going to have a sign on it, we ought to say not for sale. Not for sale for anything. Our bodies aren't for sale at any price. Not for popularity, not for a boyfriend or a girlfriend you're dying to have, not for a partner that you'll spend the rest of your life with. Even if you're, if you just give in now, our bodies are not for sale, not at any price. Or, our minds are not for sale at any price. Philippians 4 and verse 8 teaches us that we ought to think on things that are good and right and honorable and true and noble. And we're not going to sell out our mind for entertainment purposes or for a good laugh, we're not for sale. And, you think about sometimes some of the things that we listen to and we get, tickled at that people say, and sometimes there are things we shouldn't even be listening to. And we don't have the courage to change the channel or walk away and not listen to those things at work. And yet, in Ephesians chapter 5, he says in verse 3, don't let immorality or any impurity or greed be named among you as is improper among saints. And there must not be filthiness or silly talk or coarse jesting, which are not fitting, but the giving of thanks. For this you know with certainty that no immoral or impure person or covetous man who is an idolater has an inheritance in the kingdom of Christ and God. You hear that inheritance message? Still there for us. It may not be an inheritance of property, but it's an inheritance that's far greater. Our minds aren't for sale. Our children are not for sale. Not for any price. Don't let children, your own children, convince you to let them do things that in your judgment are not good for them spiritually. Don't let the pressure of other parents or schools cause you to let your child participate in activities that compromise the principles that you're trying to instill in them. Don't sell them out. Not for any price. It's not easy not to have our children's approval. It's not easy not to have the school's approval or other parents' approval. But our children are not for sale, not at any price. Again, the lesson here is don't sell out for anything, not for a job, not for a piece of property, not for a vineyard, not for whatever you want to put under that category. We are not for sale. Ahab sold himself out to do evil. But Naboth said, not for sale. And that's a point that he intended to make in this. Well, what would you do if the price was high enough? What would you do for $10 million? Would you sell out? Found a survey that was pretty interesting, taken a few years ago. Survey said that for $10 million, 25% of the people they interviewed would abandon their entire family. 25% would abandon their church, 23% would become prostitutes for a week, 16% would give up their American citizenship, 16% would leave their spouses, 10% would withhold testimony and let a murderer go free, 7% would kill a stranger, 6% would change their race, and 3% would even put their children up for adoption. For $10 million. That's amazing. That's our society that we live in. Well, that's a strange thing. When I think about what Jesus said in Matthew chapter 16, he said something to Peter and to the rest of the apostles. He said, "What will a man be profited if he gains the whole world and forfeits his own soul? And what will a man give in exchange for his soul?" You know, if somebody came up to you and offered you, it'd be like somebody coming up and offering you $10 billion and saying, "I'll give that to you tax-free. You can do it whatever you want to with that $10 billion. I'll give it to you right now, $10 billion in cash. But you have to agree that next Saturday, you'll give it all up and you'll be a beggar for the rest of your life and live on the streets. Would you take it?" I doubt anybody would take that. But we'll sell our souls out for a lot less, for just a few years of some type of gratification, some type of material gain, some type of promotion in our jobs, or some type of pleasure. Only just a few years down the road, we'll meet the Lord and we'll spend our eternity in a place that we don't want to be. The devil is out there and he's always saying, "What's your price? What's your price? Name your price." He did to Jesus. That's what he did in that temptation when he took him up on the mountain and showed him all the kingdoms of the world. He knew that there was a cross in front of him, and he was offering him the crown without a cross. He was offering him an alternative route to power and to have his kingdom. He said, showed him all the kingdoms of the world, and he said, "All this I'll give you if you'll fall down and worship me. What's your price?" And he's going to offer us that same invitation. He's always offering, "What will you sell out for?" And we need to decide what, that we are. Ahab said, "What's your price?" And Naboth said, "Not for sale." And we need to think about that too. Naboth died that day. It's a tragic story. That's the last we hear about Naboth. We don't know anything about it. There's no good ending in the right as far as the writer of the Kings are concerned. He died. Said, "Not for sale." Jezebel had him killed. But better off be Naboth in the grave with his integrity and his inheritance spiritually intact than to be Ahab with his new vineyard. It's better to be Naboth and go to his grave and meet his Lord than to be Ahab and go to his grave and meet his Lord. Satan can give you a new vineyard. He can give you the toy that you always wanted, never had. But everything he has is temporal. Nothing lasts beyond the grave. So I always think about, 1 John chapter 2 and verse 15 through 17 sort of sums up all that Satan can offer you. And here's what the Lord says. He says, "Don't love the world or the things in the world. If anybody loves the world, the love of the Father isn't in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and boastful pride of life, is not from the Father, but it's from the world. And the world is passing away in all of its lusts, but the one who does the will of God, he abides forever." And this is what the devil can offer you. But everything he can offer us is just temporary. But God has a different inheritance that he's offering, a better inheritance. 1 Peter chapter 1, verse 3 and 4. He said, "Let not your Peter chapter 1, verse 3 and 4. Blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, who, according to his great mercy, has caused us to be born again to a living hope through the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead, to obtain an inheritance which is imperishable and undefiled and will not fade away, reserved in heaven for you." Two inheritances. They're there. And we have to make a choice which one that we want. The devil's inheritance, something that's temporal, or the Lord's inheritance, which is something eternal. Tonight, obviously, this would be an invitation for you to make a choice about that. Make a choice of what you think is important in life. Make a choice. Think beyond the end of our noses. Think beyond what we can see with our eyes. Think beyond our tendency to want to gratify ourselves with things instantly. And just like Ahab that went down and took that vineyard, we need to look beyond the grave and look at our eternal existence and what we want that to be. Maybe tonight you would want to make that choice, and if this is a time that we can invite you to choose the Lord, and choose eternal things, be baptized for the forgiveness of your sins, or maybe you're a Christian and you just need to choose better. Maybe your choices are not wise, and you're making choices that are going to spiritually be detrimental to your eternal existence. This would be a time to choose better as we stand and sing our song.